Good morning, Portland, Maine, Southern Maine. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB 1310 on your AM dial. You know what AM stands for, Deb?
I should. Being an AM radio.
Oh my God, I really put you on the spot. Something about amplitude modulation, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Wow. It is Saturday, May 30th.
Yep.
You know what's crazy?
Through May.
You know what I just noticed? We had snow still on the ground on May 2nd here in Falmouth, just north of Portland.
Wow.
And what that meant, and we also had snow on October 31st.
Yeah.
That was 8 straight months where there's been snow. October, November, December, January, then February, March. And it just, when you put it like that, 8 months out of the last 12, there's been some snow on the ground.
Yeah.
And now we're still in May, and we're still in the same month where there was snow on the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
Mind-boggling.
Very mind-boggling.
You know?
I'm glad there wasn't any snow out there today.
Yeah, it's only a matter of time before the commercials show up on TV for get your snowplow ready.
I know.
I think we have like another 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And then it's like, hey, come to Fisher Plows. Or do you have a plow preference? Do you like Fisher? What do you like?
Fisher's good. I think we have a Fisher, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I have people that take care of that on the estate. So,
Because you're a media titan.
There you go.
You're a big media, a big deal in the media thing. You know who I talked with yesterday?
Who?
I don't even think I should.
You have to tell me now.
I have to tell you now. I met the gentleman who we hope to get in here sometime soon for an interview, who is in the middle of purchasing the Portland Press Herald.
Oh, Reed Brower.
Right. From Camden. He was in the neighborhood. He stopped by to say hi. And apparently the transition occurs on Monday, where he is purchasing the paper from Donald Sussman, who is married to Shelley Pingree. And from talking to Reed, it should be an exciting transition.
Nice.
He's really committed to the community, really committed to Maine, and a real down-to-earth guy.
Nice.
And so sometime in the next few weeks, he's going to come by.
Great.
And we're going to talk about all things having to do with newspaper and journalism. And as this broadcast airs on Saturday, and 48 hours from now, the Portland Press Herald will have a new owner.
A new owner.
The newspaper, so you read the paper every day, Deb?
Not every day, I have to admit.
Yeah. I grew up outside of Boston, and I was a paper boy when I was like 5 years old, six years.
Yeah.
And like at 5 a.m, some truck would deliver 40 newspapers, you know, bundled up to my house. And I had this newspaper bag, and I carried them around.
That's right.
And we actually had afternoon papers too.
Yep.
Which seems kind of weird, where between like 8 a.m, there was one set of news, and then stuff must have been happening at such a fast pace that 8 hours later, here's a whole new set of news.
Yeah. Well, the newspaper business in general was a very fast-paced. Yeah. Is probably still, but it seems slower now with the internet.
Well, it's both slower and faster. The print version feels kind of slower because the internet, like right this second, I could be looking at my Twitter feed or Facebook or anything, AP. In every few seconds, there's a new bit of information.
Yeah, breaking news right now.
Yeah. And right now, people all over Maine are driving around, and maybe they're sitting in their homes. Maybe they're on a rocking chair.
Maybe they're on a beach.
Maybe they're driving through Maine, coming up from Massachusetts, and they're tuned to WLOB.
Yes.
News Talk, you know.
Yes.
I was going to say News Talk on the Riviera, but News Talk on what, Casco Bay?
Sure.
Oh, man.
On the Rocky Shore. News Talk on the Rocky Shore. There you go.
Yeah. And so we're delivering news right now. So before we get to on this day, in a few minutes, we have our special guest, Bill Ryan Jr., coming in.
Yes.
He is a very interesting guy, personal friend, the general owner of the Maine Red Claws. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to talk about sports, what's going on in Maine. He's always, he's kind of a worldly guy. He goes off to Olympics and he goes to big sporting events. He kind of gets around. So we'll talk about that a little bit. What else do we have going on? Did you see 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, my column on riding on the Casco Bay?
No.
Really? Do you ever read...
Rioting on Casco Bay?
Rioting?
Oh, riding.
Riding. No, there may be some rioting. We'll get to that. No, I went on the Casco Bay Ferry.
Oh, it's a blast.
Oh, it is a blast. So I wrote a column. Which it wasn't the intention. I write a biweekly column for the Forecaster. Mm-hmm. And so for anyone that wants to go to forecaster.net and Google or search Steve Wood's column, please join the three or four readers that I have loyally reading that thing. Now, there's thousands. If they're not millions. But I've always had this thing for the ferry, the ferry boat. And for anyone listening, and I didn't really get this point across in the column, but I think it's one of the best values we have here in Southern Maine to do something that's kind of fun and unique where... I don't know if it's $6 or $7, whatever the fare. You only pay the fare when you leave the Casco Bay Ferry Terminal in Portland. You don't pay when you come back.
No.
So depending on what island you're going to, and you pay a flat fee, and you can just ride on the ferry. And you might as well be king of the world like Titanic.
Yeah.
You might as well be with Kate Winslet and just be king of the world. Because even if you're just riding in Casco Bay, there's something magical about being out on the water, about the ocean. Yeah. Right? It's something, you know, we're, you know, what are you, like 80-90% water, you know, human beings, and you know, we're kind of from the water. Something like that, right?
Something
like that. There's water involved in a very deep molecular state. But ever since I was a young kid, and so I wrote a column and talked about when I was, my earliest memories, used to visit my grandparents down in Quincy. They were part of, they lived in this little area called Howe's Neck. And I used to walk down to the beach with my grandfather. And he was like this old Irish immigrant guy, and he, first generation immigrant, him and my grandmother literally came from Ireland on a steamship. And so he, you know, he didn't talk a lot. He wasn't like, you know, big words, and he wasn't just a simple guy, but just a great guy, great role model. And we used to go down to the water and sit on the rocks, and we'd just sit there for an hour. He wouldn't say anything. He'd just kind of look down at the rocks, and I'd grab a rock and throw it out, and he'd teach me how to skip rocks and stuff.
Of course.
And then we had these horseshoe crabs. You ever seen a horseshoe crab?
Yes.
Crazy-looking creature, yeah. Right? It looks prehistoric.
Yeah.
It's like round, and then there's this pointy stabber thing, right? Is that? I don't think technically it's called a stabber thing, but there's a...
But we all know what you mean.
Yeah. Because if you're another animal or fish in the ocean, you see the horseshoe crab,
you gotta run
because all the horseshoe crab has to do is crawl up and just poke you with the stabber. Right?
It's bad.
I don't know how the horseshoe crab consumes the things it kills,
because
you would think with the horseshoe sticker thing, it's like 5 inches away.
Yeah,
because that would be frustrating.
That would be.
You see another fish in the ocean, you stab it, and then it's just...
Then how do you get it off the stabber?
I know.
And God, into your mouth.
I know, yeah. But evolution takes care of that.
Luckily.
But I wrote the column. You should read my columns once in a while.
I should. You're right, because I love... The ones that I read, I really enjoy.
Yeah, I know, but the problem is, back to, you know, talking about the new ownership of the Press Herald, I think because technology and multimedia and 400... TV channels and YouTube and stuff, we get so inundated with information that it becomes harder to dissect and harder to differentiate what's important news, what's important day-to-day information that impacts our lives versus whatever terrible trauma the Kardashian sisters are going through. I mean, before you know it, Scott's in rehab, right? You follow the Kardashians?
No.
Scott's in rehab. Bruce Jenner is going through a transition.
Yes.
Which, in all seriousness, I respect and support any person pursuing whatever avenue of personal happiness or identity they want. But, you know, I just don't know if they need to make a TV show to kind of over-commercialize it.
Yeah.
You know, I respect his choice you know, he's going through transgender reorientation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the rest of the stuff on the Kardashians, it's just, I don't know.
I believe this is their last season. That's what I've heard.
Through the inside
through
media
grapevine? Through the inside
grapevine,
yes.
Well, you have your finger on the pulse because you are Debbie Davis. And I think anyone knows in our listening audience that you're almost the information portal between Maine and the rest of the world.
Please. When
you're tied into Hollywood, right? Aren't you?
My sister lives in L.A. That must count for something, right?
Speaking of Hollywood, Sully, I've got a guest request for you.
And, right.
And this would be, as we say in the business, a big get, okay?
I'm ready.
Anna Kendrick.
She's on my list.
She's on your list.
She is.
And for those that may not, you know, have you seen Pitch Perfect 2?
No.
Not yet.
Oh, wow.
No.
I haven't seen it either, but I've seen the trailer. I'm going to see it. Pitch Perfect 1 was great. So Anna Kendrick is this incredibly talented young actress, and she's a singer, and she grew up in Maine, and when you go to her Twitter feed, she shows the lighthouse, so she's super committed to Maine.
Nice.
And she was in all kinds of young theater groups, and then I think when she was like 7 or 8, she went to Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And she had a number of starring roles on Broadway and kid parts. And
Pitch Perfect sounds like a musical of some kind, is it?
It
you
is.
Haven't seen even Pitch Perfect 1?
No. So it is.
I take back
that's
everything.
That's why. See, I don't like musicals.
You can't not like this. This is about pop culture. It's people acting with singing every once in a while.
Yeah. Oh, I know what it is. Yeah. The last musical I think I watched was Grease.
Ooh.
Like as a play or
Olivia Newton-John?
The movie?
The movie. That's the last.
That's like 40 years ago.
Really? I don't like musicals usually.
How about Mamma Mia?
No, I didn't see that.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You're not just playing dumb with me?
No, I'm not.
You're
playing
really
dumb.
I
haven't seen it.
Okay, you've
and I don't feel like I missed anything.
Okay, go to Netflix. Go run. In fact, leave the studio right now. Sully will take over the controls. You've got to see Mamma Mia. Have you seen that, Sully? You know?
I haven't.
That was with...
Abba's not really my...
Oh, Abba.
Yeah, what's that gal's name who was...
Not Blake.
Streep?
Is it Meryl Streep?
Meryl Streep
played, the female lead.
You know what? I promise you I will watch it this
week. Oh, Mamma Mia is unbelievable.
Because I have Netflix and I...
And you have plenty of time.
Plenty.
You're just hanging around.
I'll see if the boy boys will watch it with me.
Hey, there's no shame in that game. It's good music. It's great acting.
Mm-hmm.
But then you've got to watch Pitch Perfect 1.
Okay.
And Pitch Perfect, and that stars Maine's very own Anna Kendrick.
Okay.
And even if we just do a telephone interview, even if it's just 3 minutes, getting Anna Kendrick, start stalking her on Twitter, Sally.
Oh, check.
Start saying that, you know, Maine's biggest radio host.
Yeah.
I was going down the list. Maine's biggest radio host wants to interview Anna Kendrick.
Because
she's so witty, she's so clever, in all honesty, she's incredibly talented.
Nice.
It'd be great to actually have her on the air. What else do we get? We've got stuff going on. We've got Bill Ryan in a few minutes. Did you follow our very own Maine State Senate just voted on a bill that still has to go to the House next week on carrying concealed weapons and not needing a permit?
Mm-hmm. I did.
I can only guess what your position is on this, but why don't I ask, what do you think of it?
You know, I believe in our Constitution, and it says nothing shall keep us from keeping and bearing arms, so I don't know why there should be any restrictions. However, the other side of me says, yeah, but we have people with mental illness who shouldn't
see, that's the smarter side of you. The second side feels like the smarter side.
The smarter side.
Yeah, the first side seems
a little reflective here. Either way this goes is
nobody's
okay
trying
with me.
To restrict. You just need to have a permit. Argument of, you know, people are trying to take away our guns.
No, I don't believe they're trying to take away your gun.
In the same way that we legislate people not having machine guns or having bazookas.
Right.
Looking back on something written 150 years ago and suggesting because it's written then that we can't modify it, that's one of the reasons it's called an amendment. That's one of the reasons why laws
evolve. Yeah, but it's not an amendment. It's a law, and that's different. If you want to have an amendment, you need the people to vote on it to change the Constitution, and that's not what's happening. That's the only thing. I kind of hope it doesn't pass.
Yeah. I just think if somebody wants to buy a gun, that's fine. If they're safe about it, and I think that's great. But a concealed weapon is a should I ask right now? Let me ask right now, and again, I'm going to put you on the spot. Are you packing heat right now?
I'm not packing heat right now.
But you could be, because we've talked about this before. You're heavily armed at home.
I could be packing it, but I'm not.
But at home, you're heavily armed. You're like Soldier of Fortune. You're like...
No, there's a happy medium in there somewhere, which I qualify as.
Where do you live? Bitterford, Saco?
Somewhere? Bitterford, yeah.
Okay, what's next to Bitterford?
Saco. Rundle.
Have you ever felt like maybe if there's a big, you know, conflict between Saco and Bitterford... that it's going to be good that you have all those weapons. Because if all of a sudden the good people of Saco are like, hey, we want to take over this ball field in Bitterford, you and your neighbors, it's good that you're
we could, well, you know, I like to be prepared.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's my deal.
Because it's 2015. You never know when Vermont is going to come across.
There's more people than there are law enforcement.
Right.
Right.
So,
and when issues happen, like riots in Baltimore and Ferguson, for instance,
right,
that we've seen in recent times happen, and it should have happened in front of my house,
yeah,
I can feel a little protected because I know the cops will be busy. They won't be able to stand out front of my house and protect me.
What kind of conflicts have you had historically at?
I've had none.
None so far. But it's good knowing.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like learning how to swim if you live in the mountains and you don't live near water. If you happen to be near water and you fall in, it's good to know how to swim.
I know, but right? I don't know what that means when, you know, you pick up a paper every week and an 8-year-old kid shoots his 6-year-old sister because a gun was left in a car.
Well, but that's not a reason not to have a gun.
I'm not saying it is.
That's just education.
Well, I know, but the more available and the lower the standards for permitting weapons, more people who shouldn't have guns will have guns.
But I do think that people who shouldn't have guns still get guns today anyway. It doesn't make any difference whether you have to go through a permit system or not. If you really want one, you're going
to
get one.
Yeah, but people are crappy drivers whether they have a driver's license or not, but you need to go through a licensing
thing. That's true.
You know, there are people on the highway that are swerving around, and they go, well, I got a driver's license. But it doesn't mean you give up on the licensing mechanism, you know?
No.
So we accept thousands of regulatory things, whether it's our cars or safety or airbags or FDA or lettuce not having certain pesticides or food. We accept it. We accept electricity and FCC regulation. We accept environmental stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that gun regulation is somehow sacrosanct just seems...
But it is, because it's in our Constitution saying that we have the right to keep and bear arms.
But
it doesn't say if you have a license.
It was in the 1800s.
It doesn't matter when it was.
It does, because militias were fighting each other. We were coming out of a period of slavery where slave owners were afraid that people were going to use guns. There's all kinds of history that is no longer relevant. There's all kinds of history about... you know, a free militia, about people not being afraid that governments were going to take over their property because our government itself was forming. In 2015, there's new realities, a new landscape, and we should have new thinking.
And with all the danger that goes on nowadays, you don't think it's prudent to have a gun in the house?
I think for some people it's prudent. I think everyone should have the right, as long as they... are playing by the same set of rules. But yeah, I would never advocate that we take away people's guns. I grew up as a Boy Scout. I grew up, riflery was, you know, my
it's
favorite.
Fun.
It's fun. It's fun. But at some point, I just think we have to be responsible. I think the argument has gotten so distorted. You know, people want to take away our guns and the government's going to run us over and all this other stuff. No, let's just be responsible. Let's just get a permit. People that, you know, meet those requirements, I'm fine with having guns.
There you go.
Anyhow, we got another minute before we're going to bring in Bill. What else do we have on this day? You didn't see what the first on this day is?
Isn't this
funny? In 1806, Andrew Jackson killed Charles Dickinson in a duel. So Dickinson,
I didn't know he killed Charles Dickinson.
Neither did I. Dickinson accused Jackson of cheating on a horse race and insulted his wife. Well, there you go. If somebody cheated on a horse race and insulted his wife, then why wouldn't somebody need to kill him?
There you go.
Wow. Although Jackson had already been a member of the Tennessee Senate and was a lawyer at the time, Dickinson shot Jackson in the chest, but Jackson's gun misfired, which I can't even imagine that. All of a sudden, your gun's misfired. The other guy shoots you in the chest.
I know.
He then recocked the gun and shot at Dickinson again, killing Dickinson. Jackson was not prosecuted for murder because many Southern men viewed duels as a time-honored tradition. Very little effect on his presidential campaign. The guy killed a guy for, you know, possibly cheating on a horse race and insulting his wife.
Yeah. Well, from what I read, Jackson was in three duels and just had a really bad temper.
You think?
Yeah.
I mean,
crazy.
But here's the other crazy thing. Back to your gun rights. This is 1806, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we aren't talking about second, third century. We're talking about like 160 years ago.
Right.
That's a blink of the eye. That's like three generations.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, just three or four generations ago, it was considered okay for one guy to shoot and kill another guy if he insulted his wife.
Yeah.
And you can go on to be president.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying?
I do.
Oh, boy.
I do.
Let's move right down. What do we got? First Indianapolis 500, 1911. Former President Taft dedicates Lincoln Memorial in 1922. Were you there for that event?
Actually, no. I missed that
one. No. That seems like that was a... I'm kidding. I think you're younger than I am. Aren't you?
I think I'm older.
Really?
I think I'm a few months older.
It's probably close.
Yeah.
You remember Gilligan's Island?
Of course.
Brady Bunch?
Of course.
Partridge Family?
Of course.
Yeah.
We used to pretend we were the Partridge Family in my yard.
Oh, you want to hear my Partridge Family story?
Oh, please.
In 1993, I was running a big tennis tournament in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called the AT&T Challenge. And Andre Agassi was there, Jim Courier, Michael Chang. It was the last clay event before the French Open. And I get a call from somebody at the local theater in Atlanta saying David Cassidy, who is starring in a musical, one of your favorite genres, wanted to come to the tennis event. And I grew up, I don't know if I idolized Keith Partridge, but he had long hair and he was cool.
He was
and
cute, man.
Well, yeah, he was adorable, right? Gotcha.
Yes.
So I'm like, of course. And we picked a day during the tournament. He came out, and I sat with him in the tournament director's table. And I spent 2 hours talking to Keith Partridge.
Nice.
Yeah. Really interesting guy.
Yeah.
Tiny. Little man.
He is very short.
He is a wee man, as we would say in Scotland.
Yes.
I've never been to Scotland.
Are you Scottish?
No, I'm Irish.
Okay, all right.
But as we say in...
Well, that's close enough.
Anywhere in the UK. But yeah. So we talked, and I was like, hey, what about that Susan Day, who played his older sister?
Yeah.
I think something was going on.
Ooh.
And then I asked him, what kind of competition was there between the Partridge Family and the Brady Bunch?
Right.
And he was like, I can't tell you anything on the record. And then he whispered, I hated the Brady Bunch. And I'm like, whoa, Marcia? You hate Marcia? Okay.
Oh, man.
We're digressing.
Yes,
what else do we get going on here? Birthdays. Mel Blanc, 1980, Manny Ramirez. We don't really care about him. 1971, Idina Menzel. Stage film actress for singing Frozen's Let It Go. Is that a song?
It is a song. Let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. So you haven't seen the movie Frozen?
You know, I think if you have kids in that kind of age group or grandkids, you kind of tap into Frozen.
Mm-hmm. And your grandkids are too young, right? Your grandson. A little too young.
Yeah. And what about your great-grandchildren? How old are they?
Oh.
How old are they now?
Oh, no.
That'll be great-grandy.
I know. I love being a grandfather, and I totally embrace it. Love my little grandson, Jack. but I just don't identify yet with being referred to as a grandpa.
Oh.
So I go with Peppy.
You will.
I'm Big Peppy.
Big Peppy.
Big Peppy. Boy, we covered a lot, but we've got to get Bill Ryan in here.
Yes, we do.
Okay, we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Bill Ryan Jr., and we'll be talking about sports and other things going on in Maine. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk, WLOB, 1310 AM.
Stay tuned for more of Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk, WLOB.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
It's basketball, but Mr. Kirch's go.
I want to start, but I also want to listen to this song, Deb.
Isn't it good?
I don't know. Where'd Sully find this?
I think it was on the Space Jam soundtrack.
You had that readily available?
I did.
It's in the CD player in the car.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I think we need to move into the interview, but I dig what I'm hearing.
Isn't it good?
As Will Ferrell would say, I'm digging it. I'm digging it big time. That's our intro music to our guest. We have Bill Ryan Jr. here in the studio. Hey, Bill, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I've never been happier.
That's good. I always hear that.
I know. It's just the way I feel. Every day, I feel like every day, if you wake up on the right side of the flowers, you kind of go, hey, it's the best day ever.
Glass is full. Not half full. It's full.
It's beyond full. It is convex. What's the thing where it's above versus con?
That's convex. You had it right.
Yeah, there's some sort of physics principle that you can fill a glass above the rim because the molecular structure holds it together.
Sure.
That's what 5 years at Needham High School
and
extra wood shop. But, you know,
that's what it gets you, huh?
Yeah. Anyhow, back to our guest, Deb. Let's get back to this. Bill Ryan Jr., general owner of the Maine Red Claws, which I think there's some sort of media law that I need to disclose.
Okay.
I think we have to go through disclosure, the
yes,
small script.
Mm-hmm.
I am a minority co-owner with Bill and about a dozen folks now, right?
Yeah, 14 actually.
14 who are involved. And it's been one of the greatest experiences of my life, Tim.
That's great.
I mean, Bill and his dad, Bill Ryan Sr., were the primary folks that had started the team. And then there's a number of minority owners and
nice.
Technically, I own about 3 basketballs and
a couple of towels.
And 4 towels.
Yep,
doesn't
know.
Matter. I love
That's
it.
All you
I
need.
Love being there at the games, and I love.
You have an old pair of sneakers too. That you've got that.
I know.
Uh-huh.
I don't get a discount on popcorn or anything. It's like
me neither.
You neither. I know. No, but the Maine Red Claws are great. But we'll want to talk about that in a minute. But you come in about once a year. And I want to talk about a bunch of things beyond just basketball. And obviously, there's some new developments with the Red Claws, with new seats and some things with the Celtics, which are kind of fun with the playoffs. But before we talk about that, talk a little bit about, I mean, you've had an interesting career in sports marketing. You started out with a career as an attorney. And for all the time I've known you, I've never held that against you.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
There are people I do. There are people who I just say, man, you're an attorney. Yeah, well, why do you do that?
I wasn't that good at it. Maybe that's why.
Well, that's what makes you a nice guy. The people who are really – I feel that way about being a sports agent. 15 years ago, I was a sports agent. And to be really good at a sports agent, I think it's really hard to also – live the most ethical professional life because there's conflict and it's an adversarial kind of process.
You want to hear my greatest story about sports agents going along with just what you said? So at one point, I was in a business where we represented race car drivers. And we represented this one driver, and he was kind of new in his career, and he was coming up. But it was right around when racing was becoming popular, so there was agents from other sports that were like snooping around, saying, "Look, how can I make a buck on this thing?" So we had this guy, and I went down to Atlanta Motor Speedway, and we were talking about some different things. And I walk into the trailer at the speedway, and there's some other guy there I'd never met before. I introduced myself, and he's like, "Hey, I'm representing blah 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 driver now. Get out." I'm like, well, wait a second. And I'm looking to the driver and his father sitting there. I'm like, well, what's going on here? You know, like, we're coming down for this meeting. And long and short of it, this guy stands up and now is like, I told you to get out. And he was a football agent. That was what his background was. So I kind of walk out and I said, all right, calm down. Let's just go outside and talk about this for a minute. So we get outside, and now he goes from the, you know, you need to get out to like trying to fight me, almost like very aggressive in the middle of the garage. You've been in garage areas and race car tracks. So he's kind of like poking me in the chest and yelling and screaming. And I'm like, okay, I think things are changing here in the racing world, you know, when you get these kind of aggressive football agents. But it goes with what you said. It's hard to be probably a completely ethical and moral.
That sounds like roid rage. That sounds like – how did the story end? So you flew down to meet with the driver, and as you're on
– The story ends with us losing the client. The football agent actually did wind up stealing the client from us, I won't go beyond that, but it was kind of a tragic end, which I won't get into. But the driver didn't have much of a career after that, and I kind of always blamed it on the situation that he was put in by the guy that he had hired. So
it's actually almost one of the plot lines in the movie Jerry Maguire.
That's where I took it from. Actually, this never happened. No, it actually did happen.
But it's just, and that's what you know. Back when, in fact, when Jerry Maguire came out, I was a sports agent down in Atlanta. And for those listeners that happen to subscribe to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Deb, is that you?
Of course.
Yeah, of course you catch up. You
I'm a big newspaper reader.
You don't read what I write this week. How would you possibly know what I'm involved with 15 years ago?
The only thing I read is there's this great guy in The Forecaster does this intentionally unreasonable article. I mean, that guy's a genius.
Oh, God,
that
Bill.
Was very nice. Very nice.
You're jesting, and we only make fun of those we love, so I'll take that as a compliment. Do you know what? In fact, I need to talk to The Forecaster. The editor, Mo, who's the editor of Forecaster, I originally said there's a quote about the unreasonable man, and it's, you know, the reasonable man adapts, the unreasonable man doesn't adapt, all progress depends on the end. And so I wanted to just call the column The Unreasonable Man.
Mm-hmm.
Mo, the editor, was like, no, we want to call it Intentionally Unreasonable.
Gotcha.
It's a different thing. It's like, it feels more aggressive. Like if somebody just wakes up intentionally unreasonable, it sounds like the guy poking you in the chest.
Sounds grumpy.
Yeah. Don't you think? Should I go back to the paper?
You should go back.
I've been waiting about a year until I got my readership up from like two or three people to four or five.
Yeah.
I was waiting until I had a little leverage. I'm still not sure if I have it, but it just felt like the unreasonable man was part of this quote.
Yeah.
And intentionally unreasonable just means like I wake up and I just want to be unreasonable.
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't fit my persona,
no.
Does it, Deb?
No, it doesn't. No.
Yeah, I'm going to have to work on that. So that was your experience in sports. And so you had a similar thing where it was like, and I want to call it a dirty part, but the agent part of it, the kind of the dark underbelly part of it. I had a basketball player, a college basketball player, come to my house once and literally ask me for money to sign.
Absolutely.
And you hear about it, but it really happened. And then he asked, and then he left, and his uncle came in and said, yeah, I think it was like $10,000. If you give us 10 G's, you know.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. There was a time, though, that Halle Berry came to my door.
I think
do you remember that story?
Told us, yeah.
Bill, have I told you that story?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
oh, you gotta hear
it's a crowd favorite. It was in the early, yeah, let me get this straight, early 90s. I had just signed Dave Justice to work with him on his marketing, and we were down in Florida at spring training. And this is when Dave Justice of the Braves was more famous than Halle Berry because her career hadn't really taken off, but she was still Halle Berry.
Right.
So Justice was supposed to come by and pick me up for dinner at like 4 in the afternoon. The baseball guys eat early. Yeah, everyone in Florida does, really. Dinner all across Florida. I think the official state dinner time is 3 or 4.
Shuts down at 6, right?
Yeah, it shuts down. It's like, you know, last call, 6 o'clock. You know, get in your strollers and
I should move there. That works
it'd be
for me.
Perfect for you. You know, maybe there's late night bingo at 6 or 7,
oh,
but
boy.
Everything shuts down. So he was supposed to pick me up and about 4 o'clock, so 3:30, quarter 4. I'm in my hotel room, the Marriott, one of the Marriotts down there, and I'm, you know, in my underwear watching Judge Judy.
Of course.
Luckily, this was radio.
Yeah, luckily, yeah, because you don't want to visualize that. As I'm watching, there was some really compelling case where, you know, one neighbor was cheating another neighbor out of a lawnmower or something, and it was like all the hard-hitting stuff was on.
Sure.
And then as I'm sitting there, all of a sudden, there's a little knock on my door, and I look through the little peephole, and there's Halle Berry.
Wow.
Now, I'm standing there in my underwear, and Halle Berry's on the other side of the door. And I don't know how many other men in the world have faced that particular dynamic, right? And it's a true story.
Bill, has that happened to you?
Halle Berry, anything?
I can't talk about it on the radio, but, you know.
Scarlett Johansson, Charlize Theron, anyone like that?
Nobody nothing, famous. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing.
Angelina like Jolie. So I'm like, Halle, I'm in my underwear watching Judge Judy. And she's like, and Dave Justice was so famous that he had tinted windows in his Range Rover or whatever he had, Expedition at the time. He couldn't get out of his car because so many kids getting autographs would hang around the hotels where the ball players were. So he kind of pushed Halle Berry out and said, hey, go up to room like 314 and get Steve.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Halle Berry. So I said, let me get dressed, Halle Berry. This wouldn't be fair to you or Dave Justice if I let you in right now.
That's correct.
This could affect your relationship.
Yes.
You don't want to do that. As an agent, that's one of the first rules you agree to as an agent.
Yeah.
All of a sudden.
No stealing their women.
No. Yeah. Even if it happens innocently. That's
right.
How stuff happens.
Right.
She waited in the hallway. And it was. And then when the three of us went out and had dinner. Okay.
Okay.
Enough of my gibberish. Now let's get back to our guest. We got Bill Ryan Jr. here.
I can leave if you want.
No. I want to hear about your story. So how did you end up going from being an attorney to working in sports marketing before, and then you get involved with Oxford Speedway, involved with motorsports, and then most recently now at the Maine Red Cross?
Not a carefully calculated plan. I became a lawyer because my parents kept asking me what the heck I was going to do with my life when I was a senior in college. And people around me, a couple were going to law school, and I had seen and enjoyed a couple of episodes of Law and Order at that point. So I made a very, very intelligent decision to go into law without having any idea what it was all about, or I'm not sure I'd ever met a lawyer up to that point. So that was, you know, it's a good training, and I'm kind of joking to some extent, but not really. When I got into law, I hated it. You know, it just wasn't for me. But I'd always been interested in sports and participated in sports when I was younger, and got very interested in racing right around that time. The firm that I was with represented Bob Baer, who's a native Maine, or not a native Mainer, but has been in Maine for 50 years now and owned New Hampshire, what was then New Hampshire International Speedway, since sold it to Speedway Motorsports. It's now New Hampshire Motor Speedway. But I got to know Bob pretty well. And NASCAR was kind of coming up at this point. This is early 90s, early to mid 90s. Got really interested in racing and said, you know, I'm going to try to figure out how to get involved in this somehow. And I talked my way into a job with a guy by the name of Paul Lufkin, who had been at Bob Wolf and Associates, which is one of the original. Bob Wolf was one of the original agents, and Bob passed away. And
he was with Derek Sanderson, and I think Yaz, or early on.
I think he had Bird. He was Bird's agent. Yeah, but it was him and Mark McCormick from IMG were kind of the guys that kind of started the whole agent business.
And Donald Dell of ProSurf. Those were considered the big three. Donald Dell had tennis in D.C., and McCormick had Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus with golf. And then Bob, I think, who his office was at like the Prudential Building or something, he just backed into it. Some of the Boston players were like, man, can you help me with my contract? Yeah. He didn't go into it thinking he was going to be a sports agent. But yeah, the guy's legendary.
So the guy that I worked with, he had been with Bob Wolf Associates, and after Bob passed away, the firm kind of, I think, disintegrated to some extent. So Paul Lufkin had gotten hooked in with another marketing agency down in Boston, and he had done a lot of racing business. That was what he had done for a long time. So I talked my way into a job with him. He liked the fact that I was a lawyer. There's always contracts involved and that kind of stuff, and you know, I kind of took a leap of faith that it was something that was going to work, because it was a startup, and I think a lot of people, you know, at the law firm I was at, where I was probably 2-3 years away from being a partner there, and kind of got a curious look about moving on to this kind of startup and also heavily involved in racing, which is not, you know, not as much as NASCAR wants you to think. There's lots of doctors and lawyers that love it. It's probably out of the major sports, the one that's the most blue collar. But that's how I wound up there, and that was actually when I told the story about you know, being poked in the chest by the football agent. That was when that occurred. But it was a great learning experience for me. Certainly, Paul had been involved in every kind of sport, but you know, in the racing world, he knew everybody there was to know, and it was so much different than law. You know, it was really out and hustling, and you know, law for me was taking a giant pile of papers, working all day and making them smaller, and then showing up in the morning and having another big giant pile of papers that I had to make smaller. So,
yeah. In addition to that, there's also my attorneys typically do exactly what you just described, but then they bill exorbitant amounts of money. So, you know, $300 or $400 an hour, and it'll be like, why did I get this bill for $2,000? And it's like, well, you don't understand. We had these big piles of paper. We had to convert them to other piles of paper.
Yeah, make them smaller.
And I'm like, okay, I guess that's how the legal profession works.
It's invaluable, obviously, to have good representation and good lawyers, but I just never wanted to be the one doing it after I figured out what it was. It's a grind. I mean, I feel for anybody in that position.
Well, let's talk about basketball.
Sure.
In 2007, working with a group of people, also your dad that some people may know, Bill Ryan Sr., former CEO of TD Bank, who is kind of legendary in Maine banking for doing some really great things. And how did the Red Claws situation come about? And let's talk about the team now, too.
Yeah, so in 2007, I was approached by a guy by the name of John Jennings, who at that point had been out of basketball for probably about 10 years. But prior to that, had been with the Celtics. He was coming to kind of switching gears from he went from basketball to politics and then wanted to go back to basketball. And he had the idea that it would be good to have an NBA Development League franchise someplace in New England. He looked around at kind of all the typical minor league towns in New England, everything from, you know, the Hartford to Springfield to all those kind of places, and got fixed on Portland and Maine as being a spot that that would be a good, you know, we're a very good minor league town, and he knew that. And he got fixated on, you know, maybe Portland would work. And he called me out of the blue. It was a cold call, simply because I was in the sports business and he was doing some networking around Maine. And I think somebody, I don't even know who, said, you know, you should call Bill. He's been involved in sports at that point for, you know, 10 or so years. And so I met with John, and I actually, you know, the development NBA Development League at that point was only 5 or 6 years old, and it had gone through a couple of changes in terms of structure. At one point, all the franchises were owned by the NBA itself, and they placed them all in the Southeast, and that didn't exactly work. And so it was a league kind of in flux and kind of new. So I didn't know much about it, but I was intrigued. I spoke to my father, who you mentioned was at TD Bank at that point and was about to retire. And, you know, he was kind of intrigued with the idea. And he said, look, you know, why don't we look at this and look at it more seriously? And we talked to John about it and said, yeah, we'll do it. And it was kind of, you know, my father said, you call some of your friends and I'll call some of my friends, business contacts, right, and put an ownership group together. So that's what we did. And, you know, John and I then worked for the next year and a half, really, to just because we decided we wanted to do it. It's not like the NBA says, oh, great, you know, you seem like good guys. Here's your franchise. You know, there's a whole process involved with it, and we had to do a lot of work to get it done. But it's been great. You know, we just finished our sixth year, and it's been, like you said, it's been, I think, very rewarding for me personally. And also, I think it's good for the community. I mean, I think a lot of people really enjoy it. You know, Maine's very much a basketball place.
And the thing that I really like with the league, it's called technically the NBA Development League, or sometimes it's called the D League, because in other sports, you know, as baseball as an example, there's four or five different levels, from AAA in the case of the Red Sox, Pawtucket, AA, our very own Portland Sea Dogs, who I also think do a great job, the Burke family and Bill Burke and his staff over there. But there's multiple layers of minor league. Same thing in hockey. But in the NBA, here in the U.S., there's leagues in Europe and all around the world, but there's only one minor league specifically for the NBA, and that's the D League. So why don't you talk a little bit about, in the case of the Maine Red Claws, a few years ago, we went to a kind of a hybrid system where directly linked to the Celtics, and tell the listeners what that kind of means in terms of players and you know, coaching staffs being kind of overseen by the Celtics, and also Danny Ainge spends a lot of time here in Maine. Yeah. I think there's a benefit there. But talk about the linkage between the Maine Red Claws and the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, over the past, you know, probably 5 years, our league's changed dramatically, where there are these one-to-one relationships. So the Celtics handle all of our basketball operations. So they decide everything from who the players are going to be to who the coach is going to be to who the trainer is going to be, which is great for us because, you know, for an organization sitting in Portland, Maine or any place else, really, you know, that doesn't have those resources like the Celtics do. The Celtics have a staff of guys that know every player everywhere in the world. You know, when I talk to guys that are our contacts with the Celtics, you know, all the player personnel guys, I'll call them and they could be, oh, you know, ask them where they are. I'm in Crete watching the European 18 and under tournament, you know. So they know every player in the world that they think might have NBA potential. All those guys don't have that potential right away, right? There's guys that need development, and that's where our league comes in. And that happens in a couple different ways. You know, in the case of somebody like James Young, who they were a first-round draft pick for the Celtics last year, he wasn't playing a lot for the Celtics, so they brought him down and sent him down to play with us. And it's a great experience for him because, you know, I think what a lot of people don't realize is NBA teams don't get a lot of chance to practice. You know, they're traveling all the time. It's a long season. It's a grind of a season. The coach doesn't want to wear the guys out. So if you're James Young, who's maybe 12th guy on the bench or not even dressing for some games, you're not getting a lot of run and you're not getting to play. So they'll send him down to us to make sure he's working on his game. The other side of that is there's guys that get the Celtics pick up in the draft in our league that aren't at that point NBA level talent for whatever reason, or weren't judged to be NBA level talent. You know, they might have gotten cut by another NBA team, or they're drafted right out of college, and there's maybe a question about whether or not they can play in the NBA. So it's, you know, it's developing those kind of players too. And you know, as we look, we've been through 6 years here. We have a ton of guys that have come through the Red Claws that are in the NBA, and some that are starting to, you know, make a real impact, you know, for their team. And you know, Avery Bradley was with us for 10 games in his rookie season, and he's credited the games with us as being key to his development because he after a while he wasn't sure if he could play because he wasn't playing at the right NBA level, and you lose confidence. So I think our league now is growing. It's changing in very, very positive ways. The NBA teams, you know, 5 or 6 years ago might not have bought into what our league was all about, but that's all changed, you know, dramatically now. Each of the NBA teams that uses the D League now realizes, you know, the value of it much more than they did.
And the other benefit I think here in Maine is the Maine Red Claws are just up the road from the Celtics. So that proximity, I mean, there are times where the team will send out an email at 2 in the afternoon saying James Young has been reassigned for tonight's game.
Yeah.
And I can just envision somebody going over to James Young in the Celtics locker room and say, hey, quick, there's a car waiting for you. You're heading up to... And that proximity gives players a chance and coaches. And there's a lot of Celtic staff that attend, if not all the games, many of the games.
Yeah.
So that's a positive.
It's huge for the proximity is huge because, you know, the way that it works and you know, because you've been in it, there's a lot of rules and regulations that go with collective bargaining agreements and stuff. So, you know, if a player is going to practice with the Celtics, he has to be at that point a Celtic and can't be assigned to us until after practice ends, and right, it has to run through a system. So, yeah, so it is funny. We'll hear sometimes like, hey, you know, we think you're going to get James this weekend, but we don't know. And we literally don't know until after they might have a walkthrough the morning. You know, if they have a game the same night we do, they might have a walkthrough that morning, or if they have an off day, they might have a practice. We don't know until, you know, somebody twists an ankle in that practice, well, then we're not getting James, you know, right. Or any of these other guys. So it's interesting that way. And you know, to your point about the staff coming up, we get a lot of the Celtics front office, and even if they're not here, they're watching the games. It's amazing to me. You know, I'll talk to Danny Ainge. If we haven't seen him for a couple of weeks, I'll talk to him, and he'll know exactly what's going on with our team. You know, he knows exactly how everybody's playing, what people's strengths and weaknesses are, and you know, I'll once in a while in the middle of our game, I'll get a text message from one of the other guys in the front office if something crazy happens and say, you know, that was strange, or that, you know, that wasn't the greatest call, or this or that. So they, you know, they very much are intertwined with us.
In the our last couple of minutes here, by the way, we have Bill Ryan Jr. He is the primary owner of the Maine Red Claws. Talk a little bit about looking forward. The Celtics have four draft picks, I think two in the first round, two in the second. What will that do, and what do you think the effect will be on where the Celtics are and their rebuilding on the Red Claws? And then in the last few seconds, want to hear your thoughts about the upcoming finals with Cleveland and Golden State and the NBA.
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity for us because it gives us a chance to, again, prove the value of our organization to the Celtics. And they know that already, right? But with young players, if they wind up keeping all those draft picks and drafting guys, they're going to have a lot of young players that are going to probably spend a lot of time with us. So that's good. And it's good for our fans, too, because those are guys I always enjoy when a fan walks into our place and maybe hasn't been to games before. And they say, well, wait a second, that's, you know, XYZ player. I remember seeing him play for Duke last year. I remember seeing, you know, people who I think are not as familiar with the D-League don't know, you know, that the guy, your favorite player that played for Duke that got drafted by XYZ team but isn't playing, he's probably playing in our league,
right?
You know, so.
I mean, James Young the year before, I mean, he just turned, I don't know, 19.
19, yeah.
Yeah, he left after freshman year with Kentucky.
Kentucky,
and
exactly.
And he was on, you know, TV, and they went to the...
And all those guys are, you know, if they don't, there's only a certain percentage of them that can actually make it to the, you know, to the NBA right away. The rest of those guys, you know, they see time in our league. So, and transitioning to the finals, I think it'll be a good matchup. You know, I'm a huge Steph Curry fan, and I'm amazed at what he's been able to do. I like an underdog. You know, he's been in an underdog pretty much his whole career. I mean, it's hard to say that now, given the fact that he's the MVP. But you know, he was unheralded coming out of high school, and people thought even coming out of college, you know, what's he going to be in this league? So, I guess I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, that starts next week, NBA. Final comment in terms of the team. I know that there's some new developments with seating and the expo.
Yeah.
And then why don't you let people know on the website where people can get more information on Maine Red Claws?
Sure, yeah. We're really excited. We're doing some rehabbing of the expo this year. All of the seating is going to be replaced. Some of it's going to be replaced with full chairs with arms. Other of the seating is going to be replaced with just chair backs. In an attempt to make it more comfortable, and it will definitely be more comfortable for fans. And there's a bunch of information and pictures and stuff that you can find on mainredclaws.com.
And as always, Bill, I try to attend every game, and you know I have eligibility left.
I do know that. Yeah, we do. We have the number.
Not for the mascot. Nothing like that. You joke, but I can hit from the corner.
We have the number 00 just waiting in a locker there with Woods on the back,
I'll
just
be
in case.
For that.
I think he'd last one trip up the court, and that might be it.
He might surprise you.
Oh, really?
I saw Antoine Walker, who was with the Celtics many years ago, a couple of years, came back to the D League, and I think I could beat him up the court. That's the new standard.
You could keep up with Antoine.
Anyhow, hey, thanks for coming by.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Steve.
Always good talking with you. We've had Bill Ryan Jr. here talking Maine Red Claws, basketball, NBA. That's it for this week. Tide Smart Talk with Steve on News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. We'll be back next week, right, Deb?
You bet.
Okay, thanks for listening. We'll be back.